Now,
the following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
1.7 billion were there for his birth. 220 countries tuned in for his first step.
Woohoo!
The world stood still for that stolen kiss. And as he grew, so did the technology. Broadcast live and unedited to an audience around the globe.
Cool, man.
Coming to you now, enclosed in the largest studio ever constructed, and along with the Great Wall of China, one of only two man-made structures visible from space. Now, it's...
I'm Speaking Plainly with Bill Hay.
Good evening, Jacksonville, and welcome back to I'm Speaking Plainly. I'm your host, Bill Hay, and joining me, of course, in the studio, as always, my producer, Holly. Holly's got a great show coming up for next week. What do you got? You got
we have Aaron Bean, a young right? man by the name of Larry Harvey.
Oh,
that,
from NASA.
That is, unlike you, is a paid engineer with NASA. I had
wow.
to go there, yeah.
Wow.
He was the first
paid
helicopter
engineering
pilot.
Consultant.
He was the first helicopter pilot astronaut.
Really?
Yes.
And he flew when?
Space shuttle stuff. Okay. I didn't stay on top of all of it, but he is going to be on the show next week, and Aaron Bean, and I actually have reached out to... our friend Schellenberg is going to come in next week, and we're all going to talk about the...
Use that friend term lightly.
I like Matt. He's my friend.
He's a good man.
Matt
is a good guy. And we're going to discuss the person that just announced for governor.
Yeah, we're also going to talk about the settlement that the city is entertaining to settle over $500,000 indebtedness by one of our city council members for only $84,000.
Is this the same city council person that's in charge of the finance committee?
Absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. That one and the same who started a barbecue business with the idea that she was going to, her family would employ 56 people in the first year, and they employed none in the 3 years that they were up and running. All have declared bankruptcy except her, of course. And we'll see how that pans out. If the city council... The interesting thing about it is it's slightly over the level that's necessary to be approved by the mayor, and I have the paperwork that was provided for me under a FOIA request through the city council for what the mayor is allowed to approve without a vote of the city council, and it's over that amount. So the city council, it'll be on their backs to determine whether or not it's a workable settlement, and I'd be interesting to hear what Matt Schellenberg has to say about whether or not that is a...
Well, he'll probably say something thing. About it.
I'm sure he'll say a lot about it.
And in regard to one of Holly's guests, looks like we had some sad news today for NASA fans. Astronaut legend John Young passed away at 87.
Yes.
He
walked on the moon.
He did. Yeah. He had the longest period of time recorded on board a space shuttle in number of flights.
And he was the first captain of the first space shuttle.
He was, along with Bob Crippen. And I will tell you that one morning I had the pleasure of enjoying breakfast with both him and Bob Crippen standing on the edge of the SLA, the shuttle landing facility, in Cocoa when they came back early in the morning and there was fog. And you've seen all of these wingtip vortices where the shuttle comes through the fog and lands with these swirls coming off the wingtips. And we stood there, and as it coasted on by and came to a stop, Bob Crippen and John Young said, okay, let's go get something to eat. And they turned and looked at me along with another guy there, Bob Seek, who was the program director at the time. And we all went to, believe it or not, these guys make thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, a week. And we all went to the Waffle House there on the Merritt Island Causeway and had breakfast.
So that, you know, interesting that you mentioned Waffle House, because when we went to see the diabetic doctor yesterday, and we talked, she asked where we like to eat, and I said, well, right. Saturday mornings it's the Waffle House, and she says, well, actually there's a phone app that shows you calories, and she said, you actually can have a waffle from the Waffle House as long as you get the sugar-free syrup.
Wow.
And their waffles taste like cake to me.
Yeah.
So now I can't have anything else the rest of the morning. Can't after have I
the hash browns covered,
can't have the
smothered,
hash brown,
chopped,
no.
and diced.
Yep.
Chop. All right. So we got to blow out some phone lines real quick because Marshall's on hold. But it is sad news that John Young passed. We're losing him left and right. You know, Buzz is still out there kicking, and in many ways, Buzz is in better physical shape than I am, believe it or not, even at age 88. So you said John was how old?
87.
87.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed like he would have been much younger than Buzz. But anyway, anyway, we'll go to the phones and bring up Tammy. Tammy, you think you have an answer for me as to why they call them soap operas?
I do. I think I do. It's because they were sponsored by soap companies.
That is true.
That's correct.
That is absolutely true.
Right.
Originally, when they were on Procter & Gamble, Colgate,
right.
and Colgate and Lever Brothers, a name that you hardly... You know, and here's something interesting. At one time, Lever Brothers was one of the biggest manufacturers of soaps and deodorants and things like that. Lifebuoy, they don't make that any longer. Can you name, without looking on the internet, the one soap that they do still make?
Ivory?
No. Ah, come on, Tammy. You've already guessed, Tammy. You're out of it. I'm looking at Holly.
Oh.
All right, so I'll give it to you. Irish Spring.
Green soap, just like Lifebuoy was.
Same green soap. Tammy, thank you so much for your guess. I appreciate it, dear, and I appreciate you being a listener and calling into the show tonight. All right, so back to Marshall, who's been waiting on long, hot, and heavy here. Marshall, welcome back to the show. And obviously, we carried on with that discussion through the rest of the evening while you stepped away, and now we're back with you again. And I assume that I have traveled down the right path.
Well, yeah, you're doing a great job. I hope there's enough interest to, you know, carry on the topic, because it's a very important thing that you're talking about and you're doing. It is one of the, center events of our culture. And we need to get some form of resolution and move in the right area. I've been on the phone too long tonight. Other people need to talk. Let me make just kind of a quick summary statement of where I was going with what I was talking about before. What we need to do, I think, is eliminate all the noise in the culture, all the red herrings, and as you do with your scientific tendency, with your science background, you simply look at the facts. There are plenty of social barometers out there that we can measure, and we can determine, really, what is the best trike. And hands down, you don't need to take my word for it. You can look at it, as I've done. It is one man and one woman joined together for a physical lifetime, reproducing spiritually or physically and spiritually as often as they can, as often as they have the opportunity, across that lifetime, raising those children with a intelligent, nurturing mom and a dad who is gender
specific
for his position. And you have gender polarity. Dad is dad, mom is mom. They set those gender sex roles for the kids. That produces happy, well-adjusted kids, and money has nothing to do with it. And let me just, I hate to do it, but I am going to do it. Again, use our family circumstance as an example, because you know me. You know where I live. You know basically my life history. I didn't ever make enough money, even as an Air Force major and, a charter pilot and things like that, to give my sons a full ride. They worked for what they got. They studied for what they got. And all six of them have done extremely well. In fact, I'm going to tell you pretty soon what Kenny's doing now. It's going to blow your mind. But they're all doing extremely well. They all married very intelligent young women that had practical values. And they're now raising a good set of grandkids. But here is the point. Of my six daughters-in-law, three are stay-at-home moms. Two are teachers, veteran teachers. They're home in the afternoon when their kids are home, so that works out fine. And Lydia, by virtue of having her 14th grandchild, will be leaving Malone on the 2nd of February and will be a full-time mom again. Those are things that work, Bill. They work. If you look at statistics, there is no other conclusion than moms and dads at home, things that you've been advocating for. So let me just shut up. I hear the music. I appreciate your patience.
Wait. You can't just come on and not let me ask you a question. So I'm going to put you on hold and then come back to you in just a minute, because it's important that we get this stuff out, and I want to make sure I'm going down the right course. So if you'll hang with me for a minute, Marshall, we'll be there. And Tim Hetherington, if you are listening to the sound of my voice, it seems like you're enjoying the show tonight. Tim, you've made some comments to the WBOB page. I can't respond back to you from there. Go to Facebook and like the I'm Speaking Plainly page on Facebook, and then you and I can converse back and forth. Tim, welcome to the show. Glad you're out there. This is I'm Speaking Plainly. We'll be right back.
Let's get back to I'm Speaking Plainly.
What you got to say?
To join the conversation, call 222-TALK.
Say, hey, hey, hey.
That's 222-8255.
What you got to say?
Once again, here's Bill Hay.
Good evening, Jacksonville, and welcome back to I'm Speaking Plainly. I keep bringing Marshall back up on the line because it's important. He is a wealth of knowledge with respect to that. So, Marshall, welcome back to the show. But, you know, I'm getting a lot of hits here on the Facebook page relative to some of the comments we're making tonight. And a lot of the women just seem to believe that the only reason why I would bring up a topic like this is because we don't want women to have their own money. And I think that's completely far from the truth.
That's an archaic, asinine statement. That's not true. It's another red herring that's out there. And again, if you look at the facts speak for themselves. What makes a stable culture is what you've been advocating for on the radio tonight and in the past. We have freedom in this country to do what we want to do. But I'm going to make this a biblical answer, and that is the very last verse of the book of Judges. It says, and every man did what was right in his own eyes. In our culture, we have so lionized this idea of freedom that we've turned it into largesse and largesse into anarchy. We have got to come back to the point where we are not looking just for ourselves, but we're looking out what is good for our neighbor, what is good for our country. And a stable family, a stable faith system, and a stable economy based on small business is absolutely, absolutely, absolutely what makes things work for the people as a whole. That's just the lesson of history.
Marshall, let me jump in for a second and refer to another comment. And just says, you know, Bill, with your thought processes, how would we ever be able to have a car or a home if we only had a one-income family? Now, how would we ever be able to have a car or a home if we only had a one-income family? And I venture to say that the two-car family didn't really start until maybe, 30, 35 years ago?
Well, frankly, you can answer that by referring to a book. I know that you said you don't read. I've got a pretty good library at home, and I do. And I'm trying, as we're speaking, I'm pulling a book off the shelf, and I'll tell you what it is. The Two Income Trap, written by two women. One is Elizabeth Warren, and another is Amelia Tyagi. I think it's about 10 years old, but it lays out very well. And there's endorsements by Senator Kennedy, Jane Bryan Quinn, Judith Winston. It lays out why middle-class mothers and fathers are going broke in this two-income trap when the one system works if you apply basic principles that have worked across the ages. We just want it all now. People used to work for a long time to get what they wanted, and they paid cash. We don't have to have nearly the things that we think we do. Now, it keeps our economy going by buying things like we do, but we really live in, compared to human history, an anomalous culture.
Well, let me ask you this. If tomorrow an edict came across that said, like they did in China years ago, only one child per family, if an edict came out and said only one paycheck per family, only the husband could work, or only the wife could work, or only the woman could work if she wasn't married, or some edict like that came across, wouldn't it mean that things like houses and cars would become cheaper?
Oh, well, I'm sure there's all sorts of economic interplays, but bottom line, there would have to be some form of economic adjustment, because just as you talked earlier about inflation and going out and buying big screen TVs, the economy we live in has adjusted to the requirement to have, for the most part, a two-income family. But the reality is, when you give up that extra car and you stop spending that extra gas and you're not buying additional clothes and you're not eating out as much as you do and you're not paying child care, suddenly a single income will work if mom is at home doing what she is absolutely, by the Creator, designed to do best. And again, I hate to do this. It's embarrassing, but our household works, Bill.
Yeah.
We've used those rules and it works. You know the guys.
I do know the guys. And as I recall, you do have two cars.
Well, yeah, well, we don't. Yeah, one of them's the little Fiat, and the other's an older.
It's still two cars, and both those cars are nicer than mine. So there you go. But I mean, I think we've gotten ourselves in the last. I mean, Marshall, you're a little older than I am, so you probably understand things from a deeper perspective going back in time. But when did we become so entrenched on the materialistic things? When did houses stop being, for example, the house right outside my front gates? When it was built, it sold for $5,400 for a brand new house and the lot. That same house now, they've got comparables, they're trying to sell it for $220,000.
I know the answer to the question. I mean, it's, and people out there, Lulz will tell you, it was the result of the end of World War II, when my dad, who was an infantry sergeant in World War II, went ashore in Normandy and survived by God's grace. When these guys came home, they said, never again, we're not going to do this. My family is going to enjoy life. My dad came through the Depression, they went through the war, and they said, never again. And that group of what we call the greatest generation made a bad mistake. They made life really easy for my generation. And so my generations of kids, instead of being more productive-oriented, we were social-oriented. My generation turned out more social workers and people getting degrees in psychology, et cetera, than my dad's generation, who turned out engineers and math teachers and things like that. And so we started that trend that opened the door to the hippies and the Burn the Bra movement and the really venal aspects of the women's rights movement, because there were some good aspects of it too. But my generation opened the door to that, and it's been one degradation after another in succeeding generations. So we've gotten to the point now where I need it all, I have to have it all, it's all about me. And brother, when your culture gets to that point, you got a problem. You're absolutely correct.
And we're going to talk more about this next week and going forward. But Marshall, I appreciate the fact that you've come back two or three times tonight and kind of cleared things up. Get ready next week. We're going to move into the late 18th century, early 19th century. We're going to talk about flappers and prohibition and the influence that they had on women getting out of the homes. And believe it or not, a big percentage, I found out in my research, about 20% of the women under the age of 25 in this country were involved in the alcohol and hospitality industry between 1925 and 1939.
Well, you'll find some really flaming stuff in a chapter 8 of my book if you want to redo that.
I'll reread that real quickly between now and next week. Thank you, Woody. I appreciate it.
All right.
See you, buddy. All right. So once again, the bastion of knowledge with respect to women and culture. And I know you've got something you want to say, so
nope.
Go ahead.
Nope.
Go ahead.
Nope.
Seriously.
I'm fine.
Nothing?
No. Nope. Women really didn't start moving back into the workplace until the 70s. They actually went after the war was ended. A lot of these employers, I know you say that.
Well, a lot of women were secretaries and they worked in Key Punch, because in the 60s,
no,
my sister worked at Prudential.
The women that displaced men because they were overseas and working in the war effort, when the men came home, the employers wanted the guys back. They wanted that man back doing that job that the women couldn't do as well.
Well, because they wanted their stuff done better.
They needed somebody that could do it, and they didn't have to worry about somebody getting hurt and injuring somebody's mom.
Breaking a nail.
The husbands came back in the workforce, and women didn't go back out into the workforce until the 70s.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. We'll research that.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be coming up in a little bit. Let's go to Dee. Dee, welcome to I'm Speaking Plainly.
Good evening. I wanted to touch on some things that Marshall had spoken on. My husband and I, we had three children, and we worked separate shifts. And then when they got school age, we were still working separate shifts, but we had one vehicle. And there, if I needed a vehicle, I took him to work. I loaded up the kids. We lived reasonably nice in a nice neighborhood, but we cut in areas where we could so that we could have a good life and give a good foundation to our children. And we did not buy football tickets. We didn't splurge our money, and we didn't have cable. We used Airway TV. We had a landline phone. We had one cell phone. When our kids were in middle school and high school, they rotated that phone. Whoever was not at home, they were the ones that had the phone. So they had a link to call home. We didn't have internet. We sat down with our kids and studied with along with them, encouraged them, built a foundation at home. It was the parents, and we saved that money and helped them with their education later on. They're all three married, and I've got a grandchild on the way. We sacrificed in areas, but it was a priority to us. And right. I'm not condemning, you know, women having to work. I did work part-time at different times when they were older. But when they were going to school in the morning, when they were coming home in the afternoon, I was the one with them,
and
or he was.
And your family
and
looked better.
If one was sick, the other one was at home with them.
There you go.
You know, and if we weren't able to, the grandparents were, or another family member. You know, we stayed on top of it, and it's important to do that. If women are so creative, they can do a business out of the home.
D?
Or teach your children how to be entrepreneurs. Encourage them to be.
Dee, you've done a wonderful thing, but the computer's going to take me away from you, so I thank you for being on with me tonight, and we're going to go immediately to break. Dee, sounds like you and your husband did it correctly. You're listening to I'm Speaking Plainly. We'll be right back.
Let's get back to I'm Speaking Plainly.
What you got to say?
To join the conversation, call 222-TALK.
Said, hey, hey, hey.
That's 222-8255.
What you got to say?
Once again, here's Bill Hay.
Good evening, Jacksonville, and welcome back to I'm Speaking Plainly. Boy, the time has flown by. Mm-hmm. Last 25 minutes. Hey,
yep.
Got a shout-out going out to Matt and Anastasia out there at Craig Air Center holding down the fort tonight. They're going to have a rush of planes coming in there tomorrow. For the game. Isn't there some kind of game or something going on downtown tomorrow?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that today. When they showed stuff from previous playoff games, and they showed that Miami...
Wait a minute, has there been a previous playoff? Oh, you meant other teams.
Other teams,
okay,
yeah.
Okay. We don't have... Did they make film and cameras back the last time the Jaguars had a playoff game?
Yeah, they did.
Was that like 19 years ago?
Yeah, probably. With the, you know, the hand crank cameras,
you know? My sister-in-law and I went to the Miami game because I wanted to go because it was Dan Marino's last game, and the Jaguars beat Miami. It was like 62 to something.
Yeah,
it was horrible.
That was wild.
And...
you know that's got a weigh on Marino's mind to this day. I got beat
by the Jaguars.
That was his last game. Wow.
Wow. Well, you know, the young lady that I gave the shout out to, Anastasia, she's studying to be a psychologist.
Right, and she's been here before.
Yeah, she's been on the air.
She's great.
And I get that psychiatrist-psychologist thing messed up, so I have to figure out which one is which. But now she's thinking about... doing not only that, but then doing postgraduate work, going to law school and becoming a lawyer who can then be a divorce lawyer and handle the psychological aspects of the whole divorce thing. So she's double dipping. She's getting paid to be the doctor and paid to be the lawyer.
And if anybody can do it, she can, because she's got her head on her shoulders.
She does. She does. But there's one thing. She keeps buying these cookies out there that have raisins in them. And you know I don't eat fruit.
Smart woman.
No, I don't eat them then. And they stay in the cupboard longer. I don't get to go in and steal the normal bucket of ice that I steal and then steal the cookies that I steal and then
she's
go out the door and go back
girl.
To my house. Yeah, okay, whatever. Anyway, shout out to both of those out there tonight. And this is the weekend crew that's on, but I feel bad for the guys that are running the line tomorrow with all the aircraft that may be coming in for something going on downtown. I'm not exactly sure. You know, I had someone write on the Facebook page, Bill, you're going to have to eat a big plate of crow if the Jaguars go all the way to the Super Bowl.
When they apologize, you can eat a big plate of crow.
Well, yeah, that and when I stopped laughing about the prospects of the Jaguars ever going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we both,
even in my
we
lifetime,
both know it's going to be a one and done.
Yeah, by the time they get a chance to even go to the Super Bowl, we won't even – they'll be playing on hoverboards and they'll be throwing like a digitally engineered ball from one end to the other, and Their helmets will have airbags built into them so that if it looks like they're going to hit the ground or helmet to helmet, these airbags will pop out. I mean, that's what kind of science is going to be in effect by the time the Jags get an opportunity to even come close to the Super Bowl. The best chance for them going to the Super Bowl is if someone like Shad Khan buys them all tickets, and then they go and they say, okay, you're going to sit here and watch how a real team plays football.
You don't think they're going to get the Super Bowl ring then, I guess?
No. Anyway, the ring they'll get is from the impression on the seats when they're sitting there.
Oh.
Though, anyway, moving on.
I just heard from moving Anastasia.
Moving on away from that subject of what's going on tomorrow. We then have the following night, Monday night, Dogs playing in the SEC championship game against Alabama. And I'm on the wrong side with you there. The way it shows, the way it's setting up, is that Nick's going to go home upset. Nick's going to go home upset. And the Nick I'm talking about is Nick Saban.
You know, he's going to go home upset. I am so proud of the fact that it's two SEC teams, not ACC, not the Pac-10. You know, when I was a kid growing up, all they talked about was the Rose Bowl and Ohio State and Southern Cal and UCLA. And we got no respect down here in the South for our football.
And I understand some network execs aren't too exactly happy that there's two SEC teams. They'd rather have it, you know, they think there could be a larger audience with somebody else from another region.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned by the fact that the teams down here in the South who really play for heart, who move more players from the SEC go on to have successful NFL careers than any other conference, but yet they treat us like we're the redheaded stepchildren down here. I've really enjoyed the fact I have not watched an NFL game. I'm not watching tomorrow. I'll get enough reports from everybody that just wants to rub it in if they actually win. But I don't have any desire to watch NFL
anymore. I'm going
anymore.
To Sunday school, then I'm going to church, then my mom has a problem with her printer, and I'm going to go by and help her with her printer, and then I'm cooking a lovely meal for us. There will not be the first bit of the not for long on my TV.
Just to let you know, some people might say that the Bills are going to be taking the Jags to church tomorrow.
Oh, well, you know, our son is a big Bills fan.
Well, there you go.
Doesn't care for the Jaguars because of how much money it's taken away from the police department here, and feels like that.
I'm glad you mentioned that because your son's working in corrections.
He is.
And I had a comment from one of our listeners who took the time to call the studio this week and ask for me. I wasn't here, of course, but anyway, I got the message. But apparently MRSA is an issue at the prison farm.
It's rampant down there. You have a problem with you have homeless people that will get arrested so that they have a place to sleep that's warm. And when the medical staff take a look at them and they see an infection, they put them on antibiotics, and then they take them just while they're there. And then when they get out, they sell them to the next homeless person.
Well, see, here's the issue. The one gentleman that called the studio said that they gave this young lady a few antibiotics, and she wasn't getting any better. So they then took her to the hospital, where they found out that she was full-blown sick, MRSA infection, the whole routine. They were giving her bags of fluids via IV. They were costing $200 and $300 a bag. And apparently, according to him, had they treated her a little better at the corrections center, then it wouldn't have been necessary for her to be such an exorbitant burden on the taxpayers. When she got out of jail, she went to the hospital and therefore incurred thousands, tens of thousands of dollars in medical costs
that
she was never going to be able to pay.
Anywhere. You're going to see that all over the place. People,
which goes right back to my original gospel number one of the Gospels according to Bill, we keep way too many people alive in this world. We do. You know, we're talking about from the 1800s. We're talking about women in the workplace. We're talking about women leaving the home. But let me tell you, when folks left, you know, at one point in time, St. Louis, Missouri, which you don't really think of St. Louis, Missouri as being the West. I certainly don't. I think of it like just like a little west of the East Coast, when you think about it, Missouri is not really way out there. When I think of the West, I'm thinking of Arizona, Nevada, Utah, Colorado.
But in the days of the Conestoga wagons, yes, let's hear the sound effect.
No, I can't do the horse tonight for some reason.
There you go.
Anyway, in those days, that whole, you know, the arch in St. Louis, it's called the Gateway Arch because St. Louis was considered the gateway to the West.
Yep.
Well, when you left the East Coast, you left as a family. It was a husband and a wife, or it was a guy all by himself heading to California in 1849 to mine for gold. And maybe got halfway there and decided he was going to become a gunfighter or he was going to play cards or whatever and gamble or any number of things. But it wasn't like women flooded out of Boston and New York trying to find their fortune out west. In fact, in the research I did with respect to this women in society and women in the workplace, most of the women that left out of New York and Boston at that time, the two big epicenters of commerce on the East Coast, moved off, and they were women that had nothing on the East Coast. So they became the saloon girls, and they became the barkeeps, and they became the entertainers that traveled in groups, in troops out west to entertain cowboys and ranchers and people that hung out in saloons. So it wasn't like you had a flood of women just going down to JFK and getting on a jet and flying out to Denver and wanting to be there. No, they were not the most attractive women. They were sometimes not the most healthy women. And they found that they had nothing to live for in Boston or New York, so they just decided to get on the trail and move out, you know, out to the West, to what I consider the West, Denver, Colorado, Arizona, that area. But you'd never think of St. Louis, Missouri being that, but
it was dangerous. It was dangerous to be a woman and heading out west.
It's dangerous to be a resident of Arlington. So, you know,
which is danger why I live in Callahan now.
Exactly. All right. So we're entering the last segment of this show. I'm sure we'll have something more to rant about when we get back. Phone lines are open. If you'd like to catch the last couple of phone calls, please do. 222-TALK, 222-8255. We're going to step away for just a couple of minutes and we'll be back. If you'd like to reach me on Facebook, you can do that also. Facebook.com/I'm Speaking Plainly. I've got 20 plus notes so far tonight. I'm not going to be able to get to all of them and respond to all of them. I'll try to give you a personal email back on the ones that I do get to. But that's Facebook.com/I'm Speaking Plainly or snail mail bill@600wbob.com. We're going to step away for just a couple of minutes and we'll be right back. Join us, won't you?
Let's get back to I'm Speaking Plainly.
What you got to say?
To join the conversation, call 222-TALK.
Say, hey, hey, hey.
That's 222-8255.
What you got to say?
Once again, here's Bill Hay.
Good evening, Jacksonville. Welcome back to I'm Speaking Plainly. You know, we must drive AJ crazy because I completely had my headset off and wasn't ready to go back live and I threw it on real quick, and he covered for me. And so, way to go, AJ. Thank you very much. You didn't have to hear that shuffling around.
Well, I do look into the studio there.
Yeah, it's not an easy job, really, to do what you do as a one-man gig. You know, Alan
didn't have an agent.
Alan had a hard time, you know, doing it, and Tom, obviously, fielding phone calls, running the board, picking up the news. Any news on the apartment fire, anything coming across?
I haven't got anything. I was kind of curious about that. But yeah. I'm sure they're going to be showing some of those details. They're saving it up now for the 10 o'clock news, a lot of the sources I have here, some of the news apps. But so far, nothing more than the fact that they had closed that area in Orange Park. And other than that, looks like that's...
Well, I assume if it was going to be really, really bad, that someone would have, they'd have sent out a post here on Facebook or something.
Well, so far, I can't speak with any authority, but they were saying initially, now, people reportedly were trapped in that apartment fire, but nothing has come up since then, so that could be a positive sign that didn't happen.
Exactly. We'll pray for the positive side. We're in the last segment of this week's edition of I'm Speaking Plainly. The phone lines were open. We had Paul on there. Paul dropped off. Got a couple of more minutes if you want to sneak in a phone call real quick, probably about 10 minutes to go. But we've opened up a whole can of worms here with respect to the women in the workplace. Holly, I know that that you've been sitting over there biting your cheek from time to time. I've noticed you looking and kind of giving me that shaking my head emoji on the
I'm just surfing the web. I'm not paying any attention to you because I know you're trying to bait me up.
I'm not trying to bait you. I'm trying to get your valued
now
opinion.
Now I know you're not telling the truth.
Now, let's put it this way. You work because of insurance, and that's completely acceptable. And Eric worked for a long time and retired.
Yes.
So you're pretty well set. And you enjoy your lifestyle. You have a wonderful home. You've got great cars. You have a great lifestyle. You're pretty happy with that. I venture to say that many of us, probably 60% of the people now that are struggling to pay bills, if they would live more frugally, then they would probably, in the long run, have a better life than one that's supported by the materialistic things that everybody seems to want to always have. The newest iPhone. Case in point. I get off track, but case in point. I know a fellow that is going to be one of those recipients from a tax break this particular year from a major employer. He happens to work for one of the big electronics companies that has already promised under the new Trump tax plan that they're going to be giving money to their field engineers. He's kind of like a district manager for them, and he's expecting that he's going to get $1,000 back. Now, I was talking with him yesterday because he knows that I do this radio program, and I said, what are you going to do with it? And he said, well, I've really had my eye, I guess, what is the number now, 10? Is it iPhone 10?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have an iPhone.
I don't have an iPhone either. I don't want an iPhone.
Yeah, it's the iPhone. It says the iPhone X, but it's the iPhone 10.
Okay.
And, of course, the iPhone 8 are the other models that came out with it.
And they're like $800, AJ?
$800, $900 for those, and that one has a price tag of $999, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow. Okay. So that's the iPhone 10 is $999. Okay.
Correct.
So, when he said, I've been eyeing that iPhone 10.
I'm perfectly happy with the $30 LG.
and I'm happy with the $50 LG, there you go.
No, I have an iPhone, but it's the 6S.
Right.
I was one of the ones they said it's a little old, so there might be throttling it down there.
Wow.
The other day.
Well, maybe they'll give you a rebate if you buy the 10. You can spend some money. And,
yeah.
I mean, I need to have my head examined if I go spend a grand
on a phone. Just so that you can say I have the latest model phone, but that's the society we live in.
Oh no! If I had an extra $1,000 coming in, I'd like to put up either one of those ultra high def TVs or new curtains.
Yeah.
Or I have been looking at a new refrigerator at Sam's.
The refrigerator is the first one of those on the list that I think. You know,
that refrigerator.
There's a refrigerator and a stove that just.
And you never know with a new refrigerator, you might be able to make a call on it.
There you go.
You know, you jest when you say that, but the new refrigerator has a computer. There is a new refrigerator. I'm not sure who makes it. I think it might be a Manna, but it has a sensor in it that when you pass like a gallon of milk has a scan code on it. When you pass that scan code through the door, it knows that there's milk in there, and it knows when you put it in there.
Yeah, there's more electronics now on all that.
And so you can use your phone, call your home, and find out if there's milk in the refrigerator, mayonnaise, mustard, lettuce, you know, whatever you've passed through that scanner. It's like they scanned it when you bought it at the grocery store, and then your refrigerator is scanning it when you bring it home.
So I know that the last one they delivered to my mom a few months ago, the guy told her that they don't make them to last more than a few years now because they want you to go buy a new one every two or 3 years.
There was a term for that my father used quite a bit when I was a small child growing up. It's called designed obsolescence.
And that's what they did with cars. That was reputedly when we were younger.
Right.
They weren't designed to last too long. Plus, they wanted to keep the service industry going. So
there's something to be said when you can still see 57 Chevys out running on the street, but you buy a Kia and you're lucky if you can get it to the end of your payment.
Right.
And now
they,
payments.
Well, those are the manufacturers of Hyundai and Kia that had the 100,000-mile warranty.
Right.
But
you never get them paid off. Now, AJ, when you first bought your car, how long could you finance it for?
Let's see. I think you can finance them now for about 6 years.
Well, when we were first started driving,
three years. Yeah, it was 3 years.
Right. Now they have financing plans for 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Seven years of financing.
Some of those high-end cars you can finance for eight.
That's
ridiculous.
I'm still amazed by my buddy who went in and bought a regular old Ford pickup truck. It's not even four-wheel drive. It is a four-door. So it's a four-door truck with a back seat and a normal bed. $58,000.
Oh, and the ones with the big diesel engines and the four doors and the four-wheel drive, you're looking
80 plus. Yeah, 80 plus. A comparable truck to the 2000 Dodge.
I didn't spend that for my first house.
I didn't either. My parents bought me a house.
A lot of the homes in Jacksonville were probably in the 60s, $25,000 for a three-bedroom home.
Right.
Right? And then today, usual car, that's probably even a modest car now, mid-sized car, could be about $28,000, $29,000.
Well, so now when the homeless person comes up to me in the parking lot at Sam's and wants to bum money because he says, my wife and I are living in my car, I say, well, really?
How nice
is a car, is it?
Right, exactly. It must be a big car.
Yeah, it must be really
nice. The car I drove in high school was a 64 Dodge Coronet. My dad had the title, had the original financing, came from Royal Dodge, which later became Massey Dodge. And they paid $1,326 for that car in 1964. And that was a lot of money. Yeah. $1,326. Drove it home the day President Kennedy was shot. So
don't
I guess
you remember,
they got it in 63.
There used to be a billboard when you went over the Matthews Bridge that was an advertisement for Lynch Davidson Ford for the new Pinto. And it was $1,299.
Yeah.
That was new, right?
Yeah.
And if you had a Pinto today and it was restorable, it'd probably be close to $50,000.
Yeah.
just don't rear end it.
Yeah, exactly. Just don't rear end it.
Or a Pacer. You guys all remember the Pacers.
The AMC.
Oh, man.
AMC Pacers.
There were some oogly cars right there.
The bubble car, the globe car. Anyway, we digress.
The same going forward.
Hot
and
in the
reverse.
Summertime.
We can all find ways to trim things. You know, you've been following my post this week about the temperature at the house. And I live in an old farmhouse, and I have oil-fired heat. I have a challenge every year to see how low I can get the temperature inside the house.
And you wonder why you're single.
The new record temperature is 38 degrees inside the house. And you know what? I don't have a problem with it. I can flip a switch and with oil-fired heat have it at 68 or 72 degrees in a matter of 5 minutes. But I really don't need it. I've got my grandmother's quilts. I've got
Let's think of Daphne.
She loves it. She's a dog. She comes with more fur than the coat you're wearing, by the way. And is that a jaguar coat or
this
a leopard
coat? This is rabbit.
Coat?
It's rabbit. But it's been dyed to look like a leopard.
All right. So once again, we...
I am not an animal conservationist tree hugger.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm trying to start the timer clock, but this is the last segment for this show. So we're going to be saying goodnight for this edition of I'm Speaking Plainly. But I do have something to send you home on. This week... try to avoid complacency. Just try to avoid it altogether. Remain vigilant when you're out there. Remain vigilant when you're driving. Remain vigilant whenever you're working around your house. The reason? Because you'll never know when you'll face the ultimate challenge in your life. You may be having to avoid some other guy who's texting and driving. So pay attention when you're out there on the street. Try to live your life paying attention to what's going on around you. This is I'm Speaking Plainly. I'm your host, Bill Hay. We're stepping away. We'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.